Hello and welcome to Sport Bible Stories, sponsored by Budweiser, the official beer of England. I'm Rory Jennings.
And I'm Josh Denzel.
And today we have an icon on Sport Bible Stories. I am delighted to welcome the one and only Emil Heskey into the studio.
Yes.
Honoured to have you here, Emil. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
For coming on. It's great to have you here, obviously. There's a World Cup looming and you have represented England at two major tournaments.
Yes. Two major World Cups, yes. 2002 and 2010. So, yeah.
That must have been amazing. That actually means that you qualify as part of the golden generation.
Yes, sadly. Nah, I think, yeah, it was great to go to them tournaments. I think, obviously, getting to the quarters in the 2002 was amazing. Golden generation. And the thing is, we talk about golden generation and we went out in the quarters to Brazil. So they had Ronaldinho, Rivaldo up front. Yeah,
platinum generation.
Three Ballon d'Ors. Yeah. And then they had Kaká on the bench.
Yeah. It's crackers, isn't it?
That is amazing.
But it says something about like the mentality of England fans where we thought, it's a disgrace that we lost to them.
Yeah, I know.
It's a disgrace. Yeah. When you look back at it, you think, yeah, that's so fair, mate.
Yeah, that is true. So, Emma, we are delighted to have you here. To warm you up, we're going to dive straight into some quickfire questions, if that's all right. May I ask you, who was your favourite player growing up?
John Barnes.
Okay. Which club did you support growing up?
Liverpool.
Favourite player now?
Still Messi.
Fair play. Who's the favourite manager you played under?
Two, Martin O'Neill and Gerard Houllier.
Oh, you're different price of one.
Mm. Yeah. What about favourite manager that you didn't play for? Is there anyone you would love to have played for?
Probably Jurgen now. Yeah, Jurgen Klopp.
Take that.
What's your proudest moment in football?
Oh, that's tough. If I was to take one, I'd probably just say making my debut, but I had so many proud moments.
Who's been the most influential person on your career?
I'd say my parents.
Nice.
What's your biggest interest outside of football?
I don't really have too many.
About in football, I don't care. Yeah. Relaxing.
Yeah.
Probably.
What's one thing you couldn't live without?
Probably now a phone.
Yeah, I'm with you there. TikTok.
It did.
It's a problem.
And if you could give our listeners one piece of advice, what would be the best piece of advice that you've ever heard?
Football advice, win your individual battle and help your mate.
Like generous footballer.
Yeah.
Love that. So we're going to start now and we're going to talk about your early career. That's all right. Mm-hmm. You know, when you were coming through, when you were developing as a footballer, was it clear to those around you and even maybe to yourself that you were destined for the top? Like, were you clearly the best footballer in your school?
Clearly the best, yes. But I think I actually preferred athletics. So I preferred athletics. I preferred sprinting and long jump. But then obviously it's very organised, isn't it? But then when you're playing football, you can just jump over a gate and go and play and just go and mess about. Yeah. So that became my go-to. And I was always playing with bigger kids, even though I was small. I only really started growing when I was 15, 16.
What, you were a tiddler, really?
Yeah. Well, not small, not small. Compared to what I grew up into, I was small.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't expect that.
Yeah, and then like playing, by the time I was 15, 16, I was playing with the 18s.
Right.
So then you kind of know that I'm going somewhere.
So initially, with the interest being athletics, did you potentially see a career in that route? Or did you preferred always want to be a footballer? Really?
No, I preferred that. Yeah. But then you had Linford Christie's. You had people
You come up at a good time with footballers and sprinters.
Yeah, so that was the generation. You're watching that and he's winning gold medals. He's winning races and you just want to be them. And that was it.
That is incredible. Now, was it 87 you signed for Leicester? As a 9-year-old. Yeah. Did you, when you look at it like that, obviously you knew that you were going to be a player because you've got professional clubs looking at you. But how did that start? How did that conversation happen? Were you kicking it about on
school?
School days,
yeah. So I actually didn't play Sunday League football until after I joined Leicester. Yeah, you do it the other way around, don't you? So basically, I joined Leicester as a 9-year-old, and obviously, in a Christian black household. Sunday is for worshiping, it's for church. So I would do that, and then obviously training with, I was spotted at school playing a game, and then I was asked to come as a trial. Got through that, and then a parent who was doing Sunday League football asked me to come down, but it was clean on the other side of Leicester, so I was living on one side, it was on the other side. My mum and dad weren't driving at the time, so we were catching buses, and they were coming over, picking me up and taking me back. So that's how I got into Sunday League football.
So you were playing at Leicester before Sunday League? Yeah. That's a very rare journey.
Yeah,
isn't
I
it?
Did it the other way around.
Did they know?
Yeah.
You were allowed to do that?
Well, at the time, you were allowed to play Sunday League football until you were 15, I think.
Okay.
So it was called Centre of Excellence. Right. It was totally different. So.
And then when did you progress through to representing England? At what age group?
16. Yeah.
Okay, so it was a very quick journey. The trajectory sort of slow, and then
so
really
at the time it was Lillishaw. So my age group: Jamie Carragher, Andy Ducrow, Frank Lampard. Rio was a year younger, but Rio played up.
Would Jody Morris have been in that?
2 years younger,
a bit younger, right?
Yeah. Who else? Eisen Christie. Yeah, so that
were you a good side? How did you do when you were competing?
I think we done okay. We got to, I think this went under 16s, got to quarters, I think it was. But I actually didn't join the academy that Lillishaw. Mum and dad didn't want me to leave because you had to go and go to school there. You had to stay there, and they just didn't want me to leave. So I didn't go on a trial or anything. And then at 16. Playing in the under 18s, I went for a trial, like a trial day with the national team, and then next minute I'm playing in the Euros.
So that everything seems to happen in your career. Yeah. It goes from like 100 miles an hour. It's like
So I went from under 15s playing under 18s, and then 16s playing regularly under 18s, and then my career went a bit crazy actually. Then so 16, I was left school, joined academy, which is YTS. 16 playing with the first team, got injured, come back with the 18s, played a few games with the 18s, then went back with the first team, made my debut at 17.
Debut for Leicester at 17. How was that?
Mad.
Who was it against?
QPR. We lost 2-0. I was travelling by then. I was travelling with the first team.
Yeah.
So I was one that would help out every now and again, join in some of the, but I was travelling with them just to feel what it was like. That night, whether it was a night game, that night, that day, a lot of the lads went down sick. So I was the only other forward to be played. So nice. That's when I made my debut.
Was it Filbert Street?
No, it was QPR.
Lost Street. Oh, yeah. What do you remember about the day? Was it like, it must have been incredibly spectacular.
Yeah, it was a bit crazy. But they did it well for me because they never told me.
Right. So you didn't have time to get nervous and sit there and
basically what they used to do was, and I think there's some managers probably still do it now, you go into the change rooms 2 hours before the game and they reveal who's actually playing, and that was what I found out.
That's incredible. And what about your first goal?
Good question. It was against Norwich. Cross, I think it was Simon Grayson cross, nipped into the near post and got it in.
Do you plan the celebration at that point? As a striker, you're thinking, "Why, listen, we're in our bag. I'm ready now. I've got something lined up. I've got the roly poly."
I haven't planned anything.
Although you have got one of the most iconic celebrations in world football.
Yeah.
Yes, there it is. Love that. What is it? Am I right in thinking that's a homage to UK Spoonie, garage music?
Yeah.
Spoonie.
Yeah, DJ Spoonie. So yeah, he's a good friend of mine. So it was him that got us doing that.
How quickly did you jump on? On like the change room DJ,
I was never change room DJ. And the thing is, like even back then, so you really didn't have change room. Actually,
there was no Bluetooth back in these days. Go get the vinyl out.
But nah, it was by that time we were probably all getting our own.
Yeah.
So it was, you do your own thing.
And you know, by that point, you're scoring goals regularly. Are you dreaming of playing for England? Is England the ultimate ambition?
If I'm honest with you, once I got to 16s, it was like, wow, singing the national anthem and you got that pride and you think this is it. You don't know if you're going to go any further, so you're taking that all in.
Yeah.
Then you get to the 18s and you're like, wow, same again. And you get to 21s and it's like,
I'm now one step closer.
But that helped me in my progression up to the first team because I kind of knew it from 16s what totally different.
There's like a roadmap.
And the football is totally different as well. Really? Yeah. It's not as aggressive as the Premier League. It's more tactical. Defenders are more, some defenders are aggressive, but some like understand what you want to do and they're trying to, it's like a chess game.
Speaking to the boys when I'm in camp now, every time I would chat to them after training, especially the boys who've just come in, I say like, how was it? And the overriding feeling they get before they go is like, I cannot wait to play with these mm-hmm. players. And like they get there and it's always, the first thing they always say is the intensity is a different level.
Another level.
Why is that?
I went to the 16, so I obviously come from Leicester and playing with the under 18s, playing from 15. So you're thinking that, yeah, I'm ready.
I've got a bit, yeah.
Yeah, and you go to the 16s, no. So we had Nigel Kwasi.
And, QPR.
Yeah, and he was phenomenal. So he would ping a ball with his right foot. And I'm like, okay, he's right-footed. Then he'd ping a ball with his left foot, and you're like, is he left-footed? Yeah. And then you'd have to try and do the same thing as well. But you learn, and you have to learn very quickly because the intensity and the technical ability that they want from you is at a high level.
So when did you feel like you were established?
That's a difficult one, to be honest with you, because you never really feel like you're established. Because
when you're in the mix, do you, as a player, know like there's a buzz around me now? People are watching me.
Yeah, again, once I came into the Premier League with Leicester and then started making England appearances, and then you'll see teams coming to watch you, that's when you know. Yeah,
there's a silverware with Leicester must have been a massive moment as well.
Yeah, huge. The thing is, you know, when you come up to the Premier League and everyone's saying, hey, you're getting relegated, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So you want to prove everyone wrong. So that first season, we got to, we won the League Cup. Then two seasons later, we get to the League Cup final, lose that to Spurs. And then the season after, we win it again. And we finish top half of the table. And for a team that is talking about should be relegated every season, you're like, yeah, we're doing all right here. Yeah. And we just had a bunch of players that wanted to be together, wanted to fight for each other, knew what we were all about. And we had a manager that made you think about running through a big wall. He was fantastic at that and get you on his side.
So, you know, when you discuss in there, like the love and affection that you have for the manager, mm-hmm. Leicester City and the fans, the move to Liverpool, mm-hmm. was it just too good an opportunity to turn down?
By that time, like I just said, I'd gone to 3 cup finals in 4 years.
It's outrageous achievement for Leicester, isn't it? That's incredible.
Yeah, and we'd finished top half of the table, and then the next step was where's the club going? What do I want to do? I was an England regular by then, training and playing with all these players. The next step was to see if I could do it higher up, and Liverpool came in, Spurs, Villa. I think Leeds as well.
I had a rumour, Martin O'Neill, I think there's a quote. I don't know whether this is a real quote or not, but he says, I think there was a time when you were getting touted to go to Liverpool, I think the fee was going to be around 7 million quid. And Martin O'Neill said, nah, we'll get double from Barcelona. I'm going to, if that happens, I'll drive him there myself.
Yeah, he probably did say that. That was what he was like, honestly. Got in a little bit of trouble as well because I think my agent at the time, I'd probably told him that I was going to sign a new contract. So yeah. But then he left straight after, so I
about to say, he was probably doing the same thing as you. Yeah. He's all rolling uphill.
So yeah. How come you chose Liverpool?
Yeah, being a Liverpool fan, I was with my uncle all the time and he was a Liverpool fan. And John Barnes was one of my favourite players. So yeah, always wanted to play for them. And then when they came in, it was like, that's where I want to go.
As a player, you look at the dressing room and go like, I cannot wait to link up with you. I think I'll play well with you. Mm-hmm. Or just, I want to test myself every day against these players. Who were those players in that Liverpool dressing room?
You had Jamie Redknapp, you had Robbie, you had Michael, Smitsa, Paddy Berger.
It's a good Liverpool team.
Stefan Henshaw, and this is a funny thing. So I joined them, right? And the first training session, at Leicester, we really didn't tackle because, you know, we haven't got a huge squad and you want to keep everyone, you know, you're starting 11, you want to keep everyone fit. So we'd go in, but we wouldn't really tackle. 50-50, you'd go in, but you're not going full out. First training session, get the ball, Henshaw, bang, swipe me straight from behind. Slide tackle.
Welcome to the new boy in the block.
Like, okay, cool. I understand this now. But now it was good fun because he played. The thing is, the fascinating thing with football, you've really got to try and train the way you're going to play. because that's a rehearsal for what you want to do.
In that Liverpool team, who were the big characters in the dressing room?
Carra.
Was he?
Yeah, Jamie
Carra. Even then, he'd have been
Thompson
very young.
As well. Them two together, like, nuts.
Really?
Yeah, but he's a scouser.
They're all mad. They feel at home, you know what I mean?
They're all mad.
And even now, if you look at him on Sky, like, it's the same thing. You want to be the loudest in the room. He's always got something to say.
Yeah.
And you obviously formed that partnership with Michael Owen. Mm-hmm. And that was replicated at club level and at international level. Mm-hmm. It was potentially the best form that Michael Owen ever had, linking up with you.
I think it goes back to national team, actually. National team under 18. So Michael's 2 years younger than me, so he would have been 16 and came to our 18s. And that's where it just kind of clicked from there. Fascinating thing is we played France, Henri, Trezeguet, Anelka, William Gallas, Silvestre, Willy Sagnol, Ousmane Darbo, Edouard Cisse.
But that
feeds into, we talk about golden generation. That was just my age group.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. And then you add in Zizou, you add in Thuram, you add in
Football came through a bit of a renaissance at that point. It was like, wow, everyone, if you look at the Brazil side, you look at the France side,
It's an iconic era
of football. I don't know, maybe that's just because it's showing our age now, where like we're like that. Look, that's when I was coming into football, I thought this is unreal. These guys are giants. And they're still regarded as giants.
So we're talking about, that's just my age group, and we played them, and the manager was Julio, and I was playing up front with Michael. I think it was 1-1. We drew with them, and it was funny because then he brings me to Liverpool to team up with Michael. But I'd played with the national team from then onwards. With Michael, so we just formed a partnership, and it just fit well.
Yeah.
What was it about playing with him that you enjoyed so much, or what was the reason why that partnership?
I just think we got each other. So if I know where he's, automatically he knows what I want to do. Automatically I know what he wants to do and where he's going to run. So if I get the ball and I turn, I know he's going to make a run for me, and he I know exactly where he wants the ball, and he knows exactly what I want to do. So it just makes it easier. You know, if you're flicking a ball on, no one's running.
Telepathic.
Yeah, no one's running. You lay a ball off, no one's there.
Yeah.
You're like, no, I lay a ball off, I know Michael's there. I flick a ball on, Michael knows that he's got to get behind.
Yeah.
I'm going up for a header, Michael knows that he's got to come in front of me to just knock it down. And then he might lay me back in. Whatever it may be, we already know what each other wants.
Did you purposefully and sort of opt into choosing the role as the foil for Michael? Did you try to adopt a position that would accentuate his positive and
probably, but again, it worked in my favour as well, because that was what I was good at.
Yeah.
And that was my game, and I could adapt my game to whatever. You know, if you look at the early part of my career, it was adapted because we had to make runs in behind. So I was quick. Make runs in behind, create chances, cross the ball. And then as a typical number nine, I need to hold up the ball, but I can adopt that game. Because I'm able to do that, and my game was very adaptable. I played left wing, played right wing, I could do them, no problem.
Do them all. And Michael Owen, are you still mates?
Yeah, we still speak to each other, but more so when we're doing work together.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Because obviously, Joe, did you ever in when you're talking about playing that incredible for us in that age group,
mm-hmm.
you and Julio ever speak previous to, because I know it was a long time where he's going to Liverpool. He's mm-hmm. Everyone kind of knew it, but it was like the unwritten thing. So did he ever speak to you and go, listen, I like the way you play. I've got this idea. I think we can be successful.
It wasn't until just before I'd gone there. So before that, no. I hadn't spoken to anyone.
What was he like as a manager? It's very different.
Very different to
Martin. I mean, you talk about it, it's like chalk and cheese.
Yeah. But it's tactical awareness as well. So I'd gone from a manager just personally wanting the best from you, blah, 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 and giving you the right to be the best you possibly can. But really, tactically, we didn't really work on loads of stuff. It was, you're good at this, go and do it.
Yeah.
You're good at taking players on, go and do it. If you lose it, don't worry, get it back and go and do it again. So you're like, oh, I've got free reign to be the best I possibly can. But then obviously going to Liverpool, where it's more tactical, you've got a lot of the ball. So you've got no runs to be made, what the opposition are doing. But I remember sitting in, we never did meetings. Well, hardly ever did meetings at Leicester, but then every day we do meetings at Liverpool, and it was like 45 minutes. So imagine sitting in a room, you got the TV there, pitch black room, I'm at the back sleeping.
So you're being used to it.
Yeah. You're there like,
What was going on? What was happening?
It's basically tactics. It's talking about the opposition. It's talking about what the runs they're going to be making, everything.
On a presentation, yeah. Sort of using the telly as a program.
So in the end, obviously, you get used to sitting there, and it's important. But it's everyday thing now. But back then,
it was brand new. Yeah. And it was obviously this alien coming from. I've been successful here.
Yeah,
like, I'm a strategist, need to score goals. I can't know how it works. I played with him before.
There you go. So then, obviously, but it's fantastic. So the detail that they would go into was brilliant, and that was what you got. That's why you get the best out of yourself at times. And then we'd walk through tactics on the pitch for like 40 minutes, really just walking through it. So yeah, he was phenomenal.
Did you ever get? Like a sense of, you know, when you play for your boyhood club, like I can't even imagine it. But that is there an extended pressure? Is there an extra layer of, I'm walking out. I've dreamed of this as a kid in my bedroom, and now I'm living and breathing it.
Nah, you know the fascinating thing is you don't. It's other people that put pressure on you.
Yeah,
you never put pressure on yourself until other people put the pressure on you, and then you start overthinking things because it's what you know and it's what you know you're good at. So you just go out there and do it. And then once people start saying, "No, you didn't do this well," you never even thought about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Then you're like, "Oh, didn't I?"
Really, he's got the TV on. Yeah. He's going, "Well, why you make that, bro? You're going, are you telling everyone, man?"
That sort of pressure. That's when the pressure comes. But I never overthink things. You just go out and do.
Emil, probably the craziest night of your career, the UEFA Cup final against Alaves, 5-4. Mm-hmm. What was it like to feature in that game?
Amazing. Obviously, playing in the final is fantastic. Never thought that I'd play in a UEFA Cup final, but finally got there, and just a great. Do you know the fascinating thing with that final, right? So, if you look at it, we probably played 60. I think that might have been the 61st game or something like that, and then we had one more game. I think we had one more league game, which you had to win to get into the Champions League. So, by that time, adrenaline. I was running on adrenaline. Yeah. Around me. Because it'd been a long season and I wasn't used to that. When I think about it, yes, we had a lot of games with Leicester in the sense of going to one cup final, but then when you go into three and some of them are like home and away, it's a lot of games. So by that time, I was just running on adrenaline and I watched the game back to know what it was like, as in what happened. But then to score that final goal, Maka, scored that final goal, and we didn't even know what to do, to be honest, because it was a goal, wasn't it? So everyone's like, "Oh, yeah, yeah." And it's like, "Oh, we've won it." Yeah, let's go on. Yeah.
What was the atmosphere like in the stadium?
Amazing, amazing. Such a fantastic stadium, and you get that big stand that's just so many fans. You're just like, oh, man. Nah, it's brilliant.
And same year, a painful memory for me, honestly. I'd tell you a story about it. Like, you came back to win the FA Cup final, that Michael Owen final. I cried. Into my pillow for about 4 nights after that. It scarred me for life. How was it? The FA Cup final at Cardiff, right?
Mm.
Incredible experience. Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah.
The FA Cup final, you know, growing up, there's one cup that you really want to win, and that's the FA Cup. Because for me, growing up, that's the one that you can see on television, that's on free to air kind of thing. So, phenomenal opportunity to go and win it. Playing against a very, very good Arsenal side.
We were flying at that point as well.
Creating chances as well. You had plenty of chances. VAR was...
Yeah. Stefan Honcho's handball, wasn't it?
Yeah. But yeah, Michael... And the fascinating thing is, any game with Michael in it, you know you've got a chance of winning.
Yeah.
Because you know anything dropping in the box, Michael's got a chance of getting onto it. And then it was... The goal where he scores, I think it's Paddy Berger plays him over the back. That goal's brilliant because... I can see what they're trying to do. He's trying to show him on his left foot, but he takes it and then slots it in. Yeah, phenomenal.
It's actually an example, that goal, to demonstrate quite how elite Michael Owen was there, wasn't it? Because not only has he won Liverpool the FA Cup, which is a huge statement in itself, but he's done what he's done to that brilliant Arsenal team. And then individually, it's Tony Adams.
One of the best
defenders that you could possibly do it 100%. To. To take it on his weak foot like that was amazing.
Yeah, and that's Michael. That's Michael for you. You know, when you look at Michael Owen and what he's actually achieving, what he's done, I don't think people realise how good he was. And I don't think people realise that it probably hasn't been done since.
Mm. I think he's marred by the not reaching that level of form later on in his career, but people don't really, people don't remember that.
Do you know where I think he's really unlucky? Do you think there's anything in this, Emil? I feel like he's a little bit unlucky, Owen, for the legacy. Like, I always back Owen. Mm-hmm. You know, when people have these conversations about in their prime, what I always say, Owen. But I think because he was a Liverpool, because he was from Liverpool, came through, then went to win the league at Manchester United. I feel like he's kind of alienated both.
That could possibly be it, but you can't take away from what he's actually done.
Yeah,
and
I
what
agree.
He's doing Ballon d'Or winner, so.
Yeah, he's the last English player to win a Ballon d'Or, isn't he?
Possibly.
Yeah, I think
he's the last English player to win a Ballon d'Or. Do you think that Liverpool team, you know, when we talk about these players, mm-hmm. and we can wax lyrical about them for so long, such a good team, brilliant mm-hmm. manager, should you have won the league?
Possibly. Again, I think it's more consistency. For us, we'd gone beat Arsenal. Then lose to Charlton or draw
is draw come down of
and that consistency, you know, that the invincible year, the consistency was phenomenal. You're not going you might be down 1-0, but you know you're going to come back and something's going to happen, and we never had that consistency. And the thing is, we're very young, so when I look at myself, I was 22 when I went to Liverpool. Michael's 2 years younger than me. Stevie's 3 years younger than me. So Cara's my age. So we had a fairly young side, and we brought Gary McAneil was fantastic for us, to be honest. Having a senior figure in there, Gary McAllister was brilliant. But we just couldn't get that little bit out of ourselves where we're going from, there's too much swing. We never had the consistency.
Right. So the form was going well for Liverpool. The partnership with Owen was brilliant. The natural trajectory is England.
Mm-hmm.
And how was that when you first got your call up and you were training with this England team? It was a great side, wasn't it?
Yeah. The thing was, it was great to be called up into the squad just to train. At that time, I think Glenn Hoddle was doing stuff like that. He was brilliant because he would bring in Rio just to train with them, just to be in and around the environment.
To get them used to the environment. When they do eventually break into the team on a full-time basis, it's
so
not surprising.
Rio had it and a few others had it, and then eventually I got my turn, and it was brilliant to be around it. And you kind of ignore, because you've got Ian Wright, looking at Ian Wright doing finishing and Alan Shearer doing finishing, you're like, it was phenomenal to be around them players.
It must have been incredible to see players like that mm-hmm. playing for it. Like, it was an outrageously talented team, wasn't it?
Gazza at the time as
Gazza,
well.
Gazza, yeah.
Yeah. So just being around that was, and that's what I say with, you know, when the manager brings players in, and the reason sometimes he's bringing players in to see what they're like in the environment.
Yeah.
Because it's totally different.
I think it's key. It's
totally different to the club environment.
Yeah. What was your proudest moment playing for England?
Probably 5-1.
Germany.
Yeah, probably the 5-1. But making a debut as well. I was lucky enough to have my grandparents see me play for the national team as well. So that's great.
Is that something that, it's such a big thing, you know. You talk about playing in FA Cup finals. You talk about making debut for your boyhood club. There's something special about playing for England. There's something standing on the touchline. You see a number come up, and it's like, I'm gonna get my first.
And they can't take that away from you as well.
Yeah,
you can't take it
away from you, which is fantastic. And out of achievements, that's one of the biggest ones.
Do you still feel that, Josh? Obviously, you're around the England team at the moment. You know, when players are going to play for England, do you feel like this squad have that kind of sense of majesty about the occasion and that?
Oh, for sure. Like, I'm lucky enough to kind of welcome the new players into the into the camp, and I sit down and talk to them, and it's like there's a buzz and there's an excitement of just being around. Honestly, it's like they're looking around St. George Park, and they've been there probably through all the age groups, right? But it looks different. I think there's a glitter on it when they come to the first team camp, and they're doing media duties for them, mm-hmm. and then they're kind of looking around and going, wow, I can't wait. And usually I get them just after the first training session, and they're wide-eyed. They're like, oh my God, you should have seen Harry Kane and Trent Shoot. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you know, I didn't realise Bellingham had it like that. And it's like, they're like kids. It's like, if I went to watch training, it's the same conversation you have. And then they just hope they get picked. They hope they get minutes.
Sounds incredible.
So it's like, you realise, I think we're now starting to learn. I think your generation, they didn't treat footballers like people almost. Like, mm-hmm. you're just footballers. Mm-hmm. Right? I think now people are starting to understand, because they can see, hang on, like, this is exactly how I would react if I was there. Like, he just happens to be an incredible footballer.
Than me. Yeah. It's me. He's just better.
He's not playing five-a-side.
Yeah.
I mean, he's playing for the national team. But there is a massive sense of majesty, and you can tell it means so much to the players. Even talking to the boys previous to this, where, like, we got World Cup, 55-man squad. Like, are we going, oh, I hope I see you.
Really?
You know what I mean? They're desperate to go.
Yeah.
What do you reckon is the best thing playing for England, then, overall? And is there, like, one...
Being at Wembley and playing in front of the home crowd, to be honest with you. I was lucky enough to play in both. So I played in the old one and I played in the new one. So I was lucky enough to play in both, and just being there, singing the national anthem in front of your home fans and seeing your family in the crowd, yeah, nothing better.
And what's your memories of the 5-1 in Munich?
Good memories. Again, it's Sven's first competitive game, I believe. And Sven was brilliant in the sense of tactically. He was very calm with his tactics as well. So he'd tell you, he'd have this little board out and he'd be moving these little mannequin things that you just move around. So telling you where to go. And he was brilliant at that. And then going out onto the pitch, we went 1-0 down after some like 7 minutes. And
But
the thing was, we had good players. So as long as we could settle things down, we're fine. And once we did, and we scored at key moments. So the second goal went in at just before half time. So you've gone from being 1-0 up in 7 minutes, probably should have been 2-0 up. Seaman makes a fantastic save, to then going in half time 2-1 down, deflated. And then you come back out and we score again 3-1. You're like, they're gone.
Yeah, yeah. Can you see that on the pitch? Because usually with Germany, you know, they're quite pragmatic. They're never down that. Can you see it in the eyes of the players? And
you can see it.
When you were playing that game, did you stick out? You know what? I'm gonna really stick it on you now. 3-1.
Go for the jugular. Was that like a tactic?
We always think that anyway. But it was, you know, sometimes everything just happens, and it just, you know, the chances are coming. I nod it down for Michael, he finishes. He gets played through, scores, he plays me through, and I finish. And it's 5-1, it's just like, wow, what just happened? The worst thing is you can't really celebrate because we've got another game on Tuesday.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to ask you, were there any celebrations?
No, I couldn't. We got another game, so you basically, yeah, well done, blah, jump on a plane back, go and play again.
Was that wasn't straight into Greece, was it?
Yeah, I think.
Oh,
so.
Was it?
Was it Greece? That was that
the
Greece.
Yeah, when Beckham scored to get us through.
Yeah, might have been that one. Yeah.
That was at Old Trafford, that one, yeah, wasn't it?
I just remember the celebration. I got a great picture of my celebration with Beck. So,
I mean, at that moment, because I think we were well in danger of not going to a major tournament. Yeah. So it's like, at that point, do you believe, or you sat there with everything crossed, or stood there with everything crossed, thinking, I don't know, I'm going to get it. And the media is going to kill us if we
don't.
Do you
know what? I look back now and I never thought we wasn't going to make it, honestly. And you're playing Greece. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Yeah,
you're playing Greece. And yeah, it come down to that last free kick. But yeah, I never thought that we wasn't going to make it, honestly.
And then bang, you're on the plane to Korea, Japan.
Yeah, yeah.
That must have felt amazing.
Great, great.
Getting told that you were going.
Yeah, and a great tournament as well. First of all, you get obviously the long list, and then suddenly you play a couple of games, and then they whittle it down. And then being on that plane was phenomenal.
How did you get the call up?
Just get a text message or someone calls you.
Oh, it's literally a call-up?
Yeah.
Oh, so I thought it'd be like way more grand than that. When they say the call-up, they mean the call-up.
It might be different now, but
it's exactly the same. They drop you a text and just go either congratulations or someone will call you, Gareth will call you,
I'll give you one. I've been out of the squad for a long time and come back in under Steve McLaren. So I was driving home, and someone, I think it was Anton Sibieski, I was at Wigan at the time, and he was driving home with me. And someone calls him, I'm thinking, what's this? Answered it, all right, Emil, it's Steve. All right, Steve. It's Steve McLaren.
Is that the plumber?
Steve the builder, yeah. Like,
all right, Steve, because you know, at that time, the players would do stupid things and call you up pretending to withhold
you on your guard.
Yeah. So I'm like, all right, Steve, been talking to Michael, blah, blah. I want you to come back into the squad. And it was only then that it clicked when he said talking to Michael and stuff like that. Oh, this is Steve.
I bet that's the real reaction, isn't it? You start putting your phone voice on.
So that was when I got back into the squad.
Really? Was it a surprise? Because
no, I was playing well.
Yeah,
I was playing well at the time, and I was at Wigan, but I was playing well, and I think there was a couple of injuries. I knew I was going to get back into the squad at some stage because I had faith in my own ability, and I knew what that was needed. And then I got called back into them.
Nice. And you know, when you went over to Korea in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
How was that tournament? Like, what, who were you close to in that squad?
Probably J-Mo at the time. There's a few funny stories about J-Mo. J-Mo's a bit crazy.
Yeah,
it was a bit crazy. And we talk about, so you go into tournaments and you talk about so much time you have. And I thought Sven dealt with that quite well. So we'd have time out with the players. So we'd go to the mall together and just walk around together. And it was great. So we'd have six security guards with us, four for Bex, two for the rest of us.
So during that tournament, the hype in England was very much, this team can win it. It was golden generation talk. You know, we had Sven Goran Eriksson. It was exciting. Did you believe that squad could win it? Yeah. Were you going to that World Cup to win it?
100%. Yeah, we believed that we could win it. And when we got to Brazil, went 1-0 up, we believed it even more.
Yeah. It solidified. Yeah.
So, and we just wasn't ready to come home. We were ready to go all the way. And that was just devastating. But again, you look at generations as well. They went on to win it with three Ballon d'Ors up front and one sat on the bench.
Can I ask a question about that game?
Go on.
Do you think Ronaldinho meant that?
I didn't think it so in the game.
Where were you when that happened?
So it come from here and swung into there. I was right in the middle.
Okay, you had a perfect view. Yeah. This is an eyewitness. You don't think he meant it?
So when I watched it back, I'm like, I think he actually meant that. But I don't think he meant it in that corner. I think he meant it in the other corner.
It was a shot, though, you think?
Yeah, 100%.
Cool. You missed out in 2006. Mm-hmm. How does that make you feel? Because when you've been involved in a tournament and you almost half expect to go, you know, and you know what you're missing, I guess.
I didn't half expect to go because, again, the 2004 wasn't a great tournament. So you kind of know. And then I hadn't been called up into a couple of squads, so I thought, yeah, that's fine. But it was great to sit back and watch it as a spectator as well and watch games that way. But they're phenomenal. Like I said, they're phenomenal tournaments. You always want to go to all of them. And I felt I missed out on one there, but I managed to sneak myself back in.
Yeah. And you're obviously going to be watching this World Cup coming up.
Yes, 100%.
What do you think? Do you think this England team can actually do it?
100% they can do it. They've got a phenomenal, some great players, but young players as well. As long as you don't put too much pressure on them.
Too late.
The thing is, you're always going to put pressure on people. Again, when there was no pressure on them for the was it the World Cup or the Euros? I think it was Euros.
Both.
But then they went to the semi-final, the final. Yeah. Now there's an expectation that they must win it.
Yeah.
And they've got to have that feeling that they've got. But I think as fans, we've just got to keep give them the right energy.
But as players, I think if you go into a tournament thinking we can't win it, you shouldn't be. You spoke about every time you went that you were in a squad or you went to a tournament. You think,
we're ready.
We've got the firepower to do this. And I think this squad really does. We proved it.
Yeah,
that we get to a semi final, we get to a final. We do have the firepower. We do have the team.
And do you know what I think this squad has? Maybe more so than any squad I can think of. Depth. Like, yeah, I think you could argue potentially that maybe your side 06 could be compared in terms of the first 11.
Mm-hmm.
But the depth of that team wasn't particularly striking. Whereas the depth of this squad is amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like we have excellent players in virtually every position.
Two or three in every position, which is great. And that pushes everyone as well, to be honest with you. Again, because I know if I'm having a bad game,
he's waiting.
But you've got the captain, Harry Kane, who probably will play most of the games. But there's still people that can step in.
Mm. What do you think of our striking options?
I think obviously the main one is Harry. Phenomenal player. Great goal scorer and wants to score goals and isn't content with scoring one. He wants three, four, five.
Wants that record, doesn't
he?
Yeah, 100%. Rooney's record. He will get it.
He will get it for sure. Harry Kane, one of those players that you trust in those life and death football situations.
Yeah,
100%. We've seen it before. Like if
clinical.
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 But the only thing I would say is he's a captain. So forwards, they really only want to focus on themselves.
Yeah.
They only want to focus on that. When you're a captain, you've got to really
think of everyone.
Everything else. So everyone else and everything else. So I think he's done really well on that side of it, because he's still getting the goals, but still managing to be that captain and be the player for the squad. So I was lucky enough to play in 2000. Was it Tony Adams? And then Shearer, and then I played. Actually, Gareth was the captain at one stage as well. So playing with them players who they don't really think about themselves, think about everyone. Mm. And that's tough when you're a striker, when you've got a really... I need you to score goals.
Yeah.
So you were called back into the squad at 2010, having missed out previously.
Mm-hmm.
What was that journey like?
Tough at times. Obviously, being left out for 4 years, I think it was, and then being called back... I think media wasn't too happy that I was being called back. But again, if you allow it, it can eat you up, but I didn't allow it. I just went and played, and this is where fans kind of are great, because they didn't feed into what was being written. They just fed into how you play, and I played well. So they praised me for that. And yeah, it spiraled into going to 2010.
How does it feel? I guess you work so hard to fight to get back in the England fold, and you're scoring goals and you're playing well and everyone's excited about it, to then have the media then say, why is he back in this squad? What's going on here? How does that make you feel? Does it give you a little bit more of a kick up the arse to go, do you know what, let me show them? Because it must be annoying.
Yeah, it's annoying, but not a kick up the backside, to be honest with you, because the thing is, if you're called back into something, it's why. It's a reason that you can. Yeah, someone's seen something and they want you to exploit that. But that someone doesn't have to be the media. That's not they're not the ones picking it. So you can only do what the manager wants you to do. And that's the key thing. I always focus on what the manager wants me to do. I'm not too worried about that. You worry about that when I was 18, 19, 20, whether I've got a six in the newspaper or not. Six doesn't really bother me now. As long as what the manager wants me to do. And that was the key thing. By that time I was 30.
Seasoned. So who was it? It was Capello?
No, it was actually Steve McLaren. He brought me up in 2008, but then I went, obviously Capello came a bit later, and Capello was the 2010, yes.
How did you find working with Capello?
I actually enjoyed it, because
wry smile on your face. Yeah. something was brewing.
Do you know what it is? Because I'd come from I was 97 or something, like 95 I made my debut. So because I'd come through different eras of coaching.
You've seen a lot of different style of coaching.
Yeah, evolution of manager.
Didn't really bother me, and he was an aggressive man.
Was he really?
Yeah, he was.
Strict,
yeah.
Yeah, I was talking to Crouchy about a few bits, and he was like, poor blimey. His face changed. He was what was that? Because I mean, I feel like the tournaments that I've been lucky enough to go to, just as doing lines then and whatever it may be, like there's a lot of freedom, you know. They allow players to be themselves, do what they want to do, really, to a point. But that wasn't the case with Capello.
No, it wasn't. Again, look, he had a certain way of doing things, and it was like that. There was an incident when we, I can't remember where we flew, but we flew into somewhere, and it was just a long day. And what we usually do is we put our bags down in our rooms, and then and we come back down for dinner, and then we have dinner together. And there's rules that you're not having your phone at dinner and blah blah blah. But this time we literally traveled so long, we just said, we're not going to our rooms. We're just going to put our bags down and we go straight in. Yeah. And I'm on my phone in the dining room, and the things that you put, they have the food in, you know,
the metal trays.
He just flipped a couple of those over
because you were on your phone.
Yeah. But the fascinating thing is, so the tables are just long tables, aren't they?
Yeah.
So I'm sat there like that, and we're all sat there, and we've all got our phones on, but he spotted me, and then
slowly,
you just one meal and blah blah. I said, okay, cool, put it away. JMO's like, what happened? He's still on his way. I said, put that away, mate. Put it away.
What was the kind of reaction? Because I feel like that squad has some characters in it.
Mm-hmm.
How did they get along? Because it's tough to be a character with an authoritarian manager.
Yeah. Didn't like it. Again, it come from an era where we basically, you do as you're told to now, really. We're working with the manager now.
Yeah.
And he still do as you're told. And... there was a certain section of players that were winning a lot of trophies.
Okay.
So they're saying, well, I'm winning it doing this, so why can't you adapt to the way that we wanted to do it? And he just wasn't willing to adapt in that way.
So did it create quite an unhappy atmosphere in the camp?
I wouldn't say unhappy, but there was people who weren't happy with, like, for argument's sake, you take away ketchup.
Yeah.
I'm not that bothered about ketchup, to be honest. If you take away ketchup, I won't eat it. I won't have it. But like, there were sections.
But do you think that at one time in your career, you're scoring goals for Liverpool, you're at top of the world, and someone's gone, you know what's going to help your game? No ketchup. You're not. I don't think you're probably as.
Also, it's symbolic, isn't it? It's not about ketchup. I don't care about ketchup. But if I want ketchup, I can have ketchup, surely.
Yeah.
Like, you don't need to be that pedantic about what I eat.
Yeah, I get that. But again, like I said, I'd come from a different era where the manager's like, do as you're told kind of thing. So if he says, I'm not going to have ketchup, I don't have ketchup. I can have ketchup outside of the hotel if you want me to. Do you know what I mean? So it became a bit of a battle.
Where not conducive to a happy tournament environment.
I would probably back down, but others probably didn't want to back down. Yeah.
So, you know, when we're talking about Capello there and it was all very strict, how do you think Gareth Southgate is doing now? In fact, Josh, I just realised I'm sort of sitting here with two, like an England international and a half, aren't I?
I'm the loosest. 27th man, mate.
You can sort of shed
some light on this. I've got my England wash bag here.
Yeah, mate, you're two international football. You might as well just say, you got the call up. A happy camp. Gareth Southgate, that seems to be one of his like hallmark defining features, doesn't it? Do you think that's a good idea?
Yeah, 100%. Again, when you're together for that long in a tournament is tough. So trying to keep everyone happy and keep everyone inclusive, I think that's a key thing. I think he's done fantastic in that. I think he's done fantastic in connecting the fans as well. Because that was one thing that we never really had that connection. We never really had it because, again, our connection with the fans was probably through the media, but now the social media is directly to the fans.
We're doing
talk shows, we're doing stuff with them
regularly.
So you feel that you're actually in the camp, but we were kind of just there in the middle and no one else allowed in and blah, blah. So I think he's done a fantastic job in that and connecting with the fans, because even for myself, who's played for England, I feel like I'm now still part of that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's weird, isn't it? He's managed to make even me feel like that. Yeah, like, Gareth Southgate has done incredibly well there.
Yeah,
is it all genuine, Josh? You know, when you're at St. George's Park and, I don't know, you're looking at Bukayo Saka mucking about on a unicorn and all that.
Yeah.
Is the atmosphere as genuinely happy as it looks?
I was so blessed to be a part of that, because genuinely, it was such a happy environment. Mm. It was such a chilled environment. Like, I remember walking in and they've set up the basketball court in the middle. There's a jukebox over there. There's ping pong tables. There's like a whole chill out area where they go and watch Love Island. Like this, the whole atmosphere was fantastic. You know what it's like at a tournament when you spend 3-4 weeks anywhere and you're likely to kind of get on each other's nerves.
Yeah.
Honestly, there was absolutely none of that. And that's because Gareth went, right, it's a different generation of players that we need to kind of look after them. We need to make sure that they are as comfortable as possible. And the happier they are, the better they play. And you forget that this generation, like, it's some of the kind of most random people who knock about together, because they've played together from 15, 16, 17, 18. They've been in all the squads together. So they've known each other 10 years. They're 25.
Yeah.
So it's like, I think this is probably the best atmosphere I've ever seen within an England squad. And I'm doing Lions then, and kind of having that connection with the fans, it's just, even having that was a nice way for the players to then interact with the fans. And they'd ask me, they go, oh, have you seen this? You see, what clip have we got today from the Fan Zone? All right, my mate in New York sent me.
The players are keen to find out what the clip is. The players are into the fans.
Yeah, because I'll go, like, listen, like, I've got a friend in New York and he sent me a video of one of the reactions to one of the goals. Harry's like, oh my God, unbelievable. Show me this video. Yeah. It's nice to see. And even with, like, it's a different generation. So, like, there was a battle between, like, Chile, Saka, Grealish on the filters. And there's like a long nose filter and there's like a big foot filter and all this stuff. And you'll see them, they'll be walking around like snipers. Mikhail's like, oh man, I'm getting killed on these filters. It's like, I'm descending stupid face filters. And then next time he's got Jack and he's like, oh, thanks for that, bro. But it's like, they're like kids, you know what I mean? Yeah, it's like, they're just kids. But they happen to be playing in the biggest tournaments.
I love that. Do you think, you see what Josh was saying there about like the happy vibe from the fans?
Mm-hmm.
Do you, as a theory, what do you think to this? Do fans, say in a stadium,
mm-hmm.
have a genuine result on the result of the football match?
They will do. We talk about being the 12th man. It's 100%. The energy that you give is the energy that they receive. Some have a filter where they don't even think about certain things, but some really feed off that. I've seen players be sick before they're going onto the pitch, just thinking about going onto the pitch, because they don't know what energies are going to get from the fans. They don't know it, but then once they're on the pitch, they're okay. The energy that you give as a fan is what sometimes can be portrayed onto a pitch.
Amazing. So fans have an actual impact.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
I think we saw that a little bit with the Euros, not necessarily being a home tournament, but mm-hmm. by all means, mm-hmm. it was a home tournament. The energy that was radiating out of Wembley was frightening. I think it got us through games. Mm-hmm. It helped us hold on in games.
Yeah,
you know?
100%.
And even speaking to some of the players, it's like the Scotland game, they're talking about the atmosphere was... Like, they didn't expect the atmosphere to be as crazy as it was.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, they come out and it knocks you back. Like, the boys were getting like, Jesus Christ.
Mm.
It
was I'm so up for this. Well, you know, after this chat, I'm so up for this World Cup. Emil, do you think we can actually do it?
The thing is, yeah, 100% we can actually do it. But again, there's got to be a couple of... You need luck.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. We need luck. And we're hoping, we're praying for that little bit of luck that will take us there.
For a little bit of luck. Thank you so much, Emil.
Thank you.
It's an honour to have you here. We really, really appreciate your time. Josh, keep me fully in the loop of everything going on.
Don't worry.
Wonderful time out there.
Honestly, I'm absolutely buzzing. So I think this comes out when I'm already out there. So yeah, I have a bit more of a tan.
Oh, mate.
On the socials when you see me posting up from Lions Den in Qatar.
Unbelievable. Thank you so much to everybody watching this episode of Sport Bible Stories. We really do appreciate it. Let us know your thoughts in the comments below and we'll see you all on the next episode. Cheers.